Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month in the United States. Breast cancer is the top cancer in women, both in the developed and the developing world. That's according to the World Health Organization. More than 60% of all breast cancer deaths occur in developing countries. At least 80% of people survive breast cancer in North America. However, less than 40% survive the disease in low-income countries. Breast cancer is a difficult diagnosis. Patients are faced with harsh treatment regimens and life-changing decisions. On the program today, we will look at breast cancer. And joining us via phone from Washington, D.C. is Alicia Saunders, a breast cancer survivor who 4 years ago was faced with a difficult choice, save her baby's life or save her own life. Alicia, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. Listen, as I mentioned, 4 years ago, you had to make that choice, the decision to save your life or your baby's life, because you were diagnosed with breast cancer when you were pregnant. So tell me about what went through your mind, first of all, when you had that diagnosis.
I was, no other word than to say I was terrified. Mm. I mean, just to hear the word cancer alone, we, you know, tend to think the worst case scenario. You associate cancer with death, so, you know, and then to receive that diagnosis while expecting my first child, I just was at a loss for words. I mean, it was an overwhelming experience.
Overwhelming not only to be diagnosed, but another overwhelming fact was the fact that you were faced with a very difficult choice. You had to literally kill your baby and proceed with treatment, but you said no. What gave you that conviction?
Just because, you know, I just wasn't going to allow one doctor to dictate my destiny. You know, like you mentioned, when I received, you know, the first treatment plan from the doctor, it was immediate termination and then to proceed with chemotherapy. But I just felt that I had to do my research as well as seek other opinions to see if there was if there were other options for me.
Mm-hmm. And then what did you proceed with in terms of, let me ask you this. What was the next step when you said no? Your doctor must have been surprised to hear you say no. So what did you do next?
Well, so what I did was I ended up being referred to another breast surgeon who is into modern technology. And I also consulted a team of doctors at Johns Hopkins University who were doing studies that were anti-chemotherapy. And what they did was they did a biopsy of my tumor, and they took a look at the genetic makeup of it to determine if chemotherapy would be beneficial. And in the long run, once they received the results, they determined that chemo would hurt me more than it would help me. So mm-hmm. They laid out a treatment plan of me having surgery in my second trimester, a lumpectomy to remove the tumor, and after delivery, I could have radiation as well as hormonal therapy.
It's incredible when you tell me this. I think about other women who did not have either the idea or the option to seek a second opinion. This goes to show how important having a second opinion is.
Correct. Yes, I agree. And the type of person that I am, just in life, period, I believe in options. I believe in alternatives. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to my health and my life, I was not going to allow one person to dictate what was going to happen with my future.
That's powerful. And now, tell us a little more about the treatment regimen that you had.
So as I stated, immediately when I entered my second trimester, I underwent a lumpectomy to remove the tumor. He removed the tumor as well as two lymph nodes to do testing to see if the cancer had spread outside of the tumor, which thankfully it hadn't. So I was allowed to wait until after delivery. And a month after I delivered my daughter, I then began to have 37 sessions of radiation. I went to daily radiation treatment throughout the weekdays, and then I also started a hormonal therapy, which is called tamoxifen. And tamoxifen used to be prescribed for only 5 years, but now due to modern testing and further research, they suggest remaining on it for 10 years. And what the tamoxifen does is it suppresses the estrogen an estrogen-positive cancer tumor such as my own.
So now your daughter, I saw her picture. She is so lovely. What a right decision to make, and a big
Thank
sacrifice
you.
That was completely worth it. So how is your daughter doing? She was not, was she affected somehow by this diagnosis or your treatment, or how is she doing?
Thankfully, she was not. Aside from, you know, us both undergoing anesthesia when I had the lumpectomy, she was not affected at all, which I am ever so thankful for. I mean, of course, when I started the radiation and the medicine, I was not allowed to, you know, nurse her due to the fluctuation of the breast tissue. But Julia, her name is Julia, she was not affected at all. She is a thriving, vibrant 3-year-old toddler, temperamental toddler. She's the brightest star in my life. I mean, she has no idea the story that I have to tell her to tell her, you know, how much she means and what it took to get her here. You know, I'm excited for when she'll understand her mm-hmm. journey.
Yes, and of course you getting from what you're saying is you have the intention to tell her sometime.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, what you went through. That's incredible. So what are some of the lessons that you've learned, or maybe one lesson that you'd like to share through this journey?
Well, I'd like to preach, you know, to not give up on yourself, mm-hmm. you know, and as I stated, don't take the first answer as your final answer. Do your own independent research. Seek other, you know, providers. Seek other doctors. And just entertain all of them. Don't allow the first person to lay out your destiny. If you have to go for a second, third, or fourth, I mean, in my case, I had 10 opinions total because of the 8-man team of doctors. You know, just do your due diligence, do your research, and you make the best decision for your life, for your family, and for your health.
And Alicia, how are you staying healthy today?
Chasing after a 3-year-old.
That's a good exercise right there.
I'm staying healthy, you know, with trying to do all I can to ensure that when I have an appetite, that is still a healthy diet, mm-hmm. with also doing all of my preventative maintenance on my, you know, mammograms, my sonograms. I still have those scheduled at its regular intervals. You know, if I even feel a twinge, my doctors will tell you I'm in their office. So mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, just trying to stay healthy mentally, physically, and emotionally. And most importantly, like I said, is still continue with my exams, because although I have been cleared as cancer-free, I still have to ensure that it does not return.
Absolutely. Now, tell us about the importance of a support system in this journey, because as we were talking before the show, you told me about how your family and you just had people there for you.
Yeah, that's ever so important, because going through a battle with cancer, you tend to feel alone. I mean, I understand that people will empathize, or they will sympathize with you, but unless you've received a diagnosis yourself, you cannot relate. Mm-hmm. So it is very important to gather that support system, and also to ensure that your support system is one that backs the decisions that you're making. Because, of course, you know, when I received my initial diagnosis, my family, you know, my daughter's father, they were more concerned about saving me, and you know, which is to be expected. But when I laid out to them what I had found, as well as other doctors, to get them on board with entertaining alternatives also, it made for a greater purpose, because they really supported me. They supported me seeking, you know, alternate decisions. They supported whatever decision I made. So, yes, a support group is crucial. You need someone you can turn to, talk to, shoulder to cry on, someone who will go to your appointments with you. You need all of that, because it is an emotional journey when you receive that diagnosis.
Now, what would you say to women who are faced with what you were faced with 4 years ago, perhaps pregnant and a new diagnosis of breast cancer? What would you tell them?
I just would like them to know to don't lose hope. You know, Don't take the first answer as the final answer. Don't beat yourself up. We're going to, of course, it's natural to question, why me? Why me? But turn that around and say, why not me? And then become a determined individual to seek out the best treatment plan for yourself. And like I said, as well as your baby and your lifestyle, just know that there are other options out there. There are plenty of resources. There are pregnant with cancer groups. You know, there are so many options, so many resources out there to speak to people, to learn more. So just don't give up hope.
Hope is so important with every situation, and don't give up hope is definitely a key message there. Alicia, thank you so much for joining us. Did you have any final word before we let you go?
No, I just would like to, you know, thank you for allowing me to share my story. I am truly a walking testimony. I'm an open book. You know, I love to share my journey. I love to show people and to let them hear that, I've been there, and look where I am today. And, you know, just to coach them along and let them know that, you know, no matter what, they're going to be okay.
Yes, and we appreciate your testimony, and you are such a beautiful young woman, and to see you looking beautiful and healthy and being so open with your story, we appreciate you, really, and we wish you all the best and all the best blessings, really. Thank you so much for joining us, Alicia.
Thank you so much. Take care of yourself.
Take care. And that was Alicia Saunders. She joined us to share her very inspiring story. It is now time for a short break. But first, here is a brief summary of the latest health news.
The world Food Program is ramping up emergency assistance to avert a humanitarian catastrophe in the Democratic Republic of Congo. At least 1.4 million people have been forced from their home and 3.2 million people severely hungry in the conflict-ravaged Greater Kasai region of the DRC. The UN Food Agency has appealed for aid to avoid a humanitarian crisis in the Kasai region. The organization warns that hundreds of thousands of children could die in the coming months if aid was not delivered. A new research study says marriage and having close friends may have helped protect against dementia. The research from Loughborough University in the United Kingdom followed more than 6,000 adults for just under 7 years. None of the participants had dementia at the start of the trial, but 222 were diagnosed during it. The research shows group compared to the traits of those who did and did not develop dementia to find clues as to how social life affects risk. One finding was that when it comes to friends, it is quality, not quantity, that counts. The researchers think having close friends acts as a buffer against stress, which is linked to the poor health. The research was published in the Journal of Gerontology, and that's a wrap for the latest health news.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria kills thousands of people each year, but there are some simple things you can do to protect your family. If you can, put screens in your windows. A simple screen can keep disease-carrying mosquitoes out of your home. If you go outside, wear light-colored clothing and long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. After it rains, empty all containers of standing water. The water in just one discarded tire can become a breeding ground for thousands of mosquitoes. Make sure your home is clear of debris and anything that holds water, including discarded cans, water containers, and rubbish. Empty containers that livestock drink from regularly so that mosquitoes cannot breed there.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa. This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Did you know that more than 1.6 million people acquired HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, in recent years? More than half of those infected were under 24, and most of them were young girls. You can protect yourself from HIV. If you're a man, use a condom every time you have sex. If you're a woman, insist that your partner use a condom. And whether you're a man or a woman, talk to your health provider about an HIV test.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight we are discussing breast cancer. We turn now to a recent study on breast cancer prevention. Here is Voice of America's Jessica Berman.
The study by the American Institute for Cancer Research was a review of 119 prior studies involving 12 million women, 260,000 of who had developed breast cancer. Lead author Anne McTiernan is a cancer prevention expert at Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle, Washington. In 10 of the studies involving 4,000 women of childbearing age who developed breast cancer, McTiernan says investigators uncovered a connection between alcohol consumption and increased risk of the disease.
And we found that those women who drank an average of just 10 grams of alcohol a day had a 5% increased risk of breast cancer. So 5% is a small amount, but it was statistically significant. So it gives us more confidence that it's probably real. 10 grams of alcohol is like a small glass of wine.
In another subset of studies involving 35,000 postmenopausal women who developed breast cancer, McTiernan says alcohol was found to be a greater risk factor.
We found that there was a 9% increased risk for drinking that same amount of alcohol, an average of 10 grams a day of alcohol. Again, small glass of wine, 8 ounce of beer, 1 ounce of hard liquor.
McTiernan says the World Health Organization considers alcohol to be a carcinogen or cancer-causing agent. On the positive side, investigators found that vigorous exercise, such as running or bicycling fast, decreased the risk of breast cancer in young women by 17% and 10% in postmenopausal women. Moderate activity, such as walking and gardening, frequently was found to reduce the risk of breast cancer by 13% in the most active women compared to the least active. There was also evidence, too, that eating a non-starchy plant-based diet is beneficial.
That does not mean becoming a vegetarian. It just means eating a lot of fresh vegetables and fruit, making sure the vegetables are mostly non-starchy, that means not potatoes, eating dairy products, because they're high in calcium and they may have some benefit on their own.
To the extent that being overweight has been found to increase a postmenopausal woman's breast cancer risk, McTiernan says eating a diet full of fruits and vegetables can help women keep their weight down. According to the American Institute for Cancer Research, 1 in 3 breast cancers in the United States could be prevented if women did not drink alcohol, stayed physically active, and maintained a healthy weight. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Now, a global look at cancer. The World Health Organization warns that the incidence of cancer is growing in Africa. Voice of America's William Eagle has the story.
The WHO says the leading cancers in Africa affect the breast, cervix, and prostate. Lung cancer, a prominent cause of death in the industrialized world, accounts for only 5% of cases in Africa. Dr. Andre Ilbawi is the technical officer for cancer control at WHO headquarters in Geneva. He says the cause of the illness in Africa is not always clear, though factors that may contribute to breast cancer include alcohol use, obesity, and lack of physical activity. Weakened immune systems also play a role. They are susceptible to many diseases, including cervical cancer, which is often caused by the human papillomavirus, or HPV.
The women in Africa have a higher rate of HIV, and HIV exacerbates or makes worse the effect of HPV, human papillomavirus. So we see the combination of those infectious causes really can explain the majority of cervical cancer cases in Africa and elsewhere.
Ilbawi says besides HPV, other infections can also lead to cancer.
We know that the immune system has a very important role in fighting cancer, and also in some situations, infections can directly cause cancer themselves. So having a strong immune system, we know, contributes to keeping a cancer risk low. It's not always as easy as saying malaria, for example, triggers cancer. years down the line for someone who had an exposure to malaria. But we do know that there are very much some cause and effects for infectious causes of cancer on the continent of Africa. Some include, as I mentioned, that human papillomavirus that contributes to cervical cancer. Hepatitis B and C contribute to liver cancer. There are infections in the stomach that can contribute to gastric cancer. So infections, both directly and by weakening the immune system, can contribute to cancer cases.
Not all cancers are fatal, especially if they are detected early. The WHO is working to encourage governments to adopt measures that are low cost but high impact, especially on the local or primary care level.
Early diagnosis has a strategic position in health expenditures because if we are able to detect cancer early, then the costs of treatment are lower. We know from high-income countries, for example, that detecting cancer at a stage one or stage two reduces the cost of treatment in a significant way, between two to fourfold in some settings.
He also says earlier detection makes it likely that less toxic medications can be used. WHO guidelines suggest inexpensive ways to improve cancer detection, beginning by educating the public and health workers on how to recognize potential symptoms.
But we need that person, that provider, to identify high-risk symptoms and say to a patient, I understand that you're having bleeding in your stool or a new mass or a new lump that's concerning to you, and it's also concerning to me. This may be cancer. This may not be cancer. This could be many other possible diseases. But what you need to do from here is get to the secondary level, get to the diagnostic facility so you can have access to biopsy and pathology to confirm whether or not it's cancer. Yeah. And that first-level provider is critical because that's where most patients go first. And we have to bring those providers into the health system for cancer, not just focus on developing high-cost treatment at a centralized facility when most people are either unable to get to that facility, can't afford those treatments, or get there far too late.
Other low-cost options include providing social workers and patient navigators who can help direct patients to facilities that provide blood and tissue testing and treatment. Ildawi says therapies for cancer patients do not have to be costly. They might include surgery, chemotherapy, and oral or hormonal treatments. The WHO advises countries on how to improve cancer care, including providing insurance and other mechanisms that make treatment packages affordable. Ildawi says it's a coordinated effort that includes governments, advocacy groups, the UN, and donors. Together, they help identify where strategic investments can help improve health services and extend the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. I'm William Eagle in Washington.
We turn now to cervical cancer, another type of cancer that affects many women around the world. According to health experts, women living in Africa experience the highest burden of cervical cancer. Reporter Sophia Christensen takes us to Senegal.
In the Philippe Makilène Senghor Health Center on the outskirts of Dakar, women line up for a day of free breast and cervical cancer screenings. The event is run by young Senegalese volunteers from the non-profit Junior Chamber International. Sassi Ndiaye waits for her turn. At the age of 60, this will be her second cervical cancer test. She says, before we didn't know about this. I went through 8 pregnancies and never did a cervical cancer screening with my gynecologist. I only did it after my menopause. For comparison, in the United States, it is common for women of all ages to be screened for abnormal cervical cells every 1 to 3 years. In Dakar, gynecologist Mohamedou Mustapha Yad says by the time patients come to see him, their cervical cancer can be advanced. He says, at a later stage, recovery is painful and difficult. And more importantly, the prognosis is not good. This is why screening is so important. When you catch the cancer early, treatment is easier and much less expensive. In Senegal, cervical cancer screening normally costs around $60, which most women can't afford. And women may have to travel to get the test. Many clinics, even in Dakar, don't have the necessary equipment or laboratory resources to do the test. A video colposcope had to be lent to the junior chamber volunteers for the day of free screenings. But the arrival in Senegal of a vaccine that can prevent cervical cancer could help address these challenges. Cervical cancer is caused by certain strains of the human papillomavirus, a common sexually transmitted disease known as HPV that often has no visible symptoms. A vaccine against HPV has been in use in the United States and other parts of the developed world since 2006, but it has only recently arrived in Africa. In 2013, Senegal was among 10 African countries identified by the Gavi Alliance to pilot the vaccine. The nationwide rollout in Senegal follows a successful pilot program last year in two parts of the country. Ethiopia and Zimbabwe are also set to introduce the vaccine soon. Dr. Ousseynou Badiane is head of the immunization division for the Ministry of Health in Senegal.
L'introduction va se faire en deux phases. Donc, il y a la première année où on va faire la vaccination.
He says the aim is to first launch a mass vaccination campaign, reaching over 800,000 girls by May 2018. After this, the vaccine will be routinely administered to all girls at the age of 9 as part of the country's routine immunization programs. New vaccines can be met with suspicion, so health practitioners are urging the government to also launch a public education campaign. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Dakar.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing. So definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Yes, sir. Two-Face.
Nato C. Hey. Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guest, Alicia Saunders, for sharing her story with us. For more on today's topic, log on to our website at voanews.com/healthchat. Also join us on facebook.com and let's keep the conversation going. Just look for Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Kwame Ofori, engineers Lennis and Holly, and Imotinyan Ugyabde with the news. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.